listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype.
Hello, and welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. Today I'm super excited because on the couch is a really cool guest. Mayuri Govender-Yonk is a lawyer, editor, transformation specialist, and a new mom to a seven-year-old girl. She has experience working in the school transformation space, as well as with corporate bodies and individuals leading workshops, centering anti-racist and anti-discrimination through her consultancy, BBS Consulting. And I have done one of her workshops. By day, Mayuri is an editor in the publishing space and has a legal and academic background. And Mayuri is a passionate writer and creates content for her social advocacy page on Instagram, Breaking Brown Silence, where she focuses on creating thought-provoking truth-to-power posts centering communities of color and, in particular, the South African Indian community. Her tagline, History, Healing, Justice, Joy, is a testament to the backbone of the content she creates to inspire, hold space, push, and hold up a mirror to people to bring awareness to the injustices and psychological impacts we carry due to our individual and collective histories. Whew! So, yes, I know Mayuri through Instagram initially, and I've also met Mayuri in person doing a workshop with her. I'm trying to remember the specifics of it, but I think it was about how to talk to children about race or something like that.
I think there was an element of it. I think it was an anti-racism workshop, yeah.
Anti-racism workshop. So I've been following Mayuri for years and loved all your anti-racism content, but now you are talking about motherhood. You are a mother. So that is so interesting to me. I'm so happy to have you on today. And I guess what I'm super curious about is how things have changed for you since becoming a mom. What have you discovered? I think you're such a thought leader, actually, in terms of bringing ideas into the public space. So I'm super interested in hearing how, what is your experience been of motherhood so far? And what's the fire burning inside of you right now that you want to sort of tell the world about this experience?
Hello, first of all. And the other thing I wanted to just say is, like, I don't know if this is the editor in me. If I had a typo in my bio, but she's 7 months old and not 7 years old.
And I said 7 years.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's
completely chilled. It happens, but like, typo. I don't think I would be in as much of a spin if I had a 7 year old. In my life.
Seven months.
She'll actually be 8 months tomorrow. Tomorrow she's 8 months. The thing I think that is the biggest fire is how much I have this pull to not abandon myself anymore. That is the thing I feel like the strongest as a new mother. Like, I just feel this deep energy to show up at like 210% and ensure that I'm like advocating for her and advocating for myself as a result. I know I've always had a streak of that, obviously with a page like Breaking Brown Silence, but it's just so much deeper and so much more. It just comes from a very, it's a non-reactive place. It's like a very inner child healing space within myself. And I know that a lot of people say motherhood allows you to reparent yourself in a lot of ways. And that is like one of the biggest things for me. That and just this level of protectiveness and love that I've never experienced before. And I don't think I ever will. So definitely that's the thing that overcomes all of me nowadays compared with who I was before I was a mother, you know?
So the protectiveness, what are you protecting? What do you feel is the threat? What are you noticing that you are feeling protective against?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you see like elements of yourself come up in situations, little things like, oh, she's crawling or she's starting to crawl and she's going to pull herself up and oh my gosh, she might hurt herself or little things like that. And then the escalation that you can experience in a way. And then you realize, like, I don't want her to be, to hold this anxiety the way that I do, like, and the way I have been as a person growing up sometimes in the world, right? And it's interesting to want, like, your child to be fearless in a way. Like that's where it's coming from. It's coming from a place of knowing that I can have, I've been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder from the time I was like, for like the last, I think 2014-ish is when I was diagnosed. And I've really escalated into like panic disorder and things like that for a period of time. I've done a lot of work on myself to like deal with that as a person. And so one of the things I want for her is to be able to not have that looming sense of anxiety that she constantly has to fight against. No, you can't protect them from everything, but I think my energy impacts that. So it's that is something that is constantly in my mind, you know, not being a blocker.
Oh, interesting. And how do you see that? I mean, you initially mentioned the idea of not self-abandoning. So what is the balance there? How does that play out for you?
In what sense?
Well, I think what I was imagining when you said not to self-abandon was that the act of mothering is a serious act of service to another. And your mind becomes completely preoccupied with the other's safety, needs, feelings, experiences. And that our culture is very accepting of mothers erasing their self in order to be of
Completely.
service to the child.
Totally.
So I'm curious about that in terms of what you were saying about not self-abandoning. Like if we include ourselves in the experience and we recognize that our nervous systems may be primed
Dysregulated,
to be
something.
more anxious, but that we also don't want to put that on our children. I mean, how do you manage that? How do you care for yourself and care for your child in some kind of balance?
It's complex, I think, and I don't think it's ever perfect. And accepting that is a big one, I think. Knowing that however you show up is fine. I'm still learning that. Obviously, I've only just been here 8 months in the game. So it's a different thing for me. But I really, really try to like grant myself the grace through it, you know? And if I see myself like in a situation, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, if I see myself in a space where I'm going to cross my values in order to make someone else happy or take on too much criticism or, you know, from an external situation where I feel like I'm being criticized or I'm being judged, you know, for a decision that I've made for my child, I stand there now and I'm kind of like, no, there's a reason why I'm behind this. I'm not going to fold, you know? And for me, that is such a big act of not self-abandoning. Huge act for me in not self-abandoning and not people-pleasing and not deciding that, like, oh, like being uncertain of myself. It's that anxiety again, right? That comes into that situation. Like, am I parenting her? Am I feeding her the right thing? Oh my gosh, do I need to get this extra thing that's going to help her? Like, no, actually, I know I got this. So it's really about that assure, like assuring myself, finding ways, reflecting on it later, even if I haven't made the right decision in the moment, and going like, no, I need to course correct here. I need to bring myself back to myself and feel good about the decisions I'm making and like, yeah, taking care of myself, you know, whether that is like finding a moment to sit in silence. That's a thing that like was very hard for me to like accept about motherhood in the beginning. And obviously there was a bit of a push and pull. My baby was in the NICU for 5 weeks. She was born at 34 plus six, so on the verge of 35 weeks. And she was in there for a long time, you know. So in the beginning, I didn't want to sit in silence because I just had this baby and I wanted her home with me, you know. But when she came home and things started to settle and la da da, I realized like, oh my gosh, I really will never get this quiet moment to myself. I have to make it if that's what I want, you know.
Right. Sure.
And that's a
Beautiful.
big one. That's a big one for me, finding the space for silence, right?
Making it. Yeah, I think I always speak about carving out. You're right. It's not going to be given to you. It's not going to be an offer. You have to actually like make that effort and be mindful of your needs, first of all, to have that, and then work out how to. And something has to give, right? Something you have to take away from where you would be giving your energy to something else in the system. You have to stop that so that you can. And that's really hard. But I do wonder if maybe for you, given the work you do and there's so much thought that you put into so many ideas about, I think, yourself, but then also like how you want to show up in the world, perhaps you more than most really knew your values before you had a child. I think that's quite a critical element. I think, it feels to me like you had established a sense of self and a sense of identity and a value system that you could come back to in yourself. And I think that's so important. I think so many of us have children and then figure out our values as we go. And it makes it so much harder because I remember someone saying to me when I was first a mom and you just have to be in alignment with your parenting values. And I was like,
What is that? What's that?
is this like choosing a political like system? Like, is this like me for life? Like how do I do this? How do I work that out? So, I mean, just because I think your values are in the right place, can you say to my audience, what are your values? Not necessarily parenting values, but your values that you come back to that you know if you just go back to yourself, you're in alignment. Those are your values. You've that's a consistent space for you to return to.
I think it's an evolving thing, first of all. And like, sure, yeah, there was thought that I put into that before becoming a parent. I'm an oldie as well. I've had a little bit of alone adult time to think about those things. So not to say that everybody's going to be there, when they're embarking on parenthood either, But I think when I come back to myself, I think being true to myself is very, very, very important in the sense of everyone inherently knows when something sits poorly with them and why. They don't necessarily investigate why. I know my whys about what sits poorly with me in life in general. Like, whether it's an integrity thing, an honesty thing, knowing where I stand for, like, in the bigger picture of the world, like politically and socially, is very important to me. And that's underpinned by a value of caring for others, community. Those are big values to me, like things that are centered around togetherness, asking for support, knowing that support structures are going to show up imperfectly, and focusing on people's strengths. That's a big value to me. And it was a strength walking into becoming a mother. I'm not going to lie to you, because I got frustrated. Obviously, everybody gets frustrated with the people that sometimes show up. But I could see, like, what, people are here for me. People are here for my baby. People are going to show up imperfectly. But it's people who love me and my baby. These are good people at the end of the day. We're all imperfect, right? So that was a big one for me. It was something that my husband and I discussed before even having a baby, like these sorts of values that we wanted for her and wanted for ourselves in knowing that we needed support, right?
I love that so
And
much.
it's a lot. It's a big one. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I didn't want to isolate myself because of something myopic. I didn't want that for myself. I knew I would drown. And it's not to say that I didn't still drown, because that is what becoming a mother is. But I did have places to land, which was important for me. And I'm not going to ever, like, downplay that or take it for granted, for my own mother and close friends and my father and Phil, my husband, his mother, like just our immediate family, like beyond the fact that, like, aunties and uncles were checking in and things like that. Like, it's important to have your people there if you can make that happen for yourself, right? So that was a big value to me, family and accepting people for who they are and their intentions. And another big value for me was, like, keeping it real. Like between, like, even Phil and me, like keeping it real, having a hard conversation from the jump, and like getting into it if we need to get into it, and finding a soft place to land, and literally having unpacks even if we were completely broken as newborn parents. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, keeping it real in discussions is another big. I like to keep. I like to. What is the value behind that? Conversation, you know, having an open conversation is very important to me. So yeah, those are some of the values that keep me grounded and keep me back, coming back to myself, you know.
Love the speech. So, in terms of that, the conversations, was there, I mean, I'm thinking about your NICU experience, and I would also love to hear from you about that and what was hard for you about that. I think that's something so important for all of us to understand. But maybe you can talk to that, but also just in terms of the idea of conversation, were there elements of the experience of becoming a mother that were hard to talk about, that took a I don't know, time to even understand inside of yourself to be able to express. Tell me about that.
I think everything about it is that it's not easy to talk about it or to even know what you think because it's foggy. Like it's so foggy. And it takes a lot of energy and reflection, which you don't have space for. So things take a long time to process before you can even get to the crux of why you're feeling that trigger or why you need to have that conversation. So everything was hard. But I would say that a bigger pay place, it's still hard for me to unpack the NICU, but I love having conversations like this because it's, I know I read somewhere that the more you talk about it, the more you release. So it's important for me to keep talking about it and finding space for it. That's because that experience was so traumatic, I can't even explain. So that's been really difficult to talk about. And I think the other things, like on a micro level, that's been difficult to talk about is honestly, just like the triggers that come up while you're parenting, like you don't even know why you're feeling this unsettled feeling, or you're irritated, or you're frustrated, or not with your child even, but just like in the moment of like changing a nappy, and then you're overcome with the strange feeling, and you're like, why am I feeling this edginess? What's wrong with me? And like that sort of thing is very deep. Asking for help was also a difficult one to ask to like, as much as there's been work here, like I think people must also understand that like there's always going to be that those inherent things that you find that you've always struggled with that come out in a different way when you become a mother, right? One of them is definitely like it was hard to ask for help or express myself in the sense of from a vulnerable place, like I am struggling. There was a time in my during my maternity leave where I was in a very dark, deep space because I didn't know how to like fully ask for the specific help I needed. And so I was sitting there breastfeeding my baby for like the first few months and just drowning emotionally, where I was just like, I don't think I want to be here anymore. Like those deep, dark thoughts that are just so like intense. And you don't know how to express why that's hard for you. Like breastfeeding was so hard for me. And for so many reasons coming out of the NICU that I have posted about even before. And explaining that to people and going like, it has nothing to do with my baby. Like it's not about her. Like I'm not sitting here like mad at my baby or frustrated with my baby. Like I just feel like a trash person right now, you know, because I can't do what I want, what I need to do. So yeah, I think breastfeeding maybe was a very big, hard conversation. Asking for help was hard. And like you can know something logically and still not know how to deal with it emotionally, you know?
Absolutely. And I think those are all big hotspots for many women, most women, I think, that breastfeeding and asking for help and the triggers and, you know, the sort of free-floating anxiety that comes with just the whole reconstruction of your entire nervous system and brain that is, you know, your
The
new.
chemicals.
A new person. I mean, I think that's one thing I really am curious about is, did you know when you were pregnant? Like, did you have any, when you think back to the person you were when you were pregnant, what kinds of thoughts do you have about her and what she kind of what she was thinking and where she was at and like what would you want to tell her now if you could, you know, what was sort of, yeah, where was she at?
I had a very challenging pregnancy, very, very challenging pregnancy. I at 20 weeks, we had been monitoring my cervix for a while, and it was shortening, and we didn't know why because it was my first pregnancy, and there wasn't any like prior history of knowing why it could shorten, and so I had to go in for a cervical stitch procedure at 20 weeks. The internet makes it seem like it's just this, you can do it. Everyone gets one, it's chilled, you're going to recover. Mine was not like that. And my doctor did not believe because I was shortening within a space. Like he was scared that if the next week it shortened further, I could have lost my baby. So, very scary thing to go through as a first time pregnancy. I knew I had a risk of gestational diabetes already because my mom had gestational diabetes for my brother and I, and all my aunties did for their kids as well, on both sides of my family, from my mom and my dad's side. So that was something that was always in my mind. I was like, there's a possibility I'm going to get this. I'm prepping for that. And that was part of the reason why I was having regular checkups. And then my doctor said he wanted to check my cervix at the same time, found this. That afternoon, literally a few hours later, I had to go into theater and under general anesthetic with a baby in my belly at 20 weeks and get a stitch put in. And then I was on bed rest for the rest of my pregnancy.
Wow.
So from, and I delivered early, so 3.5 months, four, no, four, yeah, 4 months, right? Yeah, about four that I was on bed rest. And during that time, I was so anxious, Carly. Like I had the most anxious pregnancy. Every day was just motivating myself to keep this a strong mindset, to not raise my blood pressure, to like it was just a monitoring system. And on top of that, having to monitor every single thing I ate because I had gestational diabetes. I lost so much weight during my pregnancy. It was unreal. It was like I had a very, very challenging pregnancy. And then at 28 weeks, my doctor was going to keep monitoring whether I could come off bed rest. I luckily had a very kind work environment that helped so much. I got to work from home for the rest for my entire bed rest, and they decreased my workload and stuff like that. Just a little bit of a ramble. But at 28 weeks, I was like, yay, I've made it to a viability point. 29 weeks, I got early contractions. And so I was hospitalized. And like it was a very wild time, and that kept happening. I was on labor suppressing medication. I was in and out of hospital lots and lots of times on monitors constantly to just protect myself and the baby, right? So something I would tell long version of getting there, one thing I would tell myself is that it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. She's going to be okay. And then to go into NICU right after that, it was really rough. It's making me emotional, but it was really rough. It was really rough.
Actually, I'm speechless about that story. That's so hectic. That I'm so sorry you went through that. Like, I can just only imagine. And I've spoken before about how difficult it is for us in our first trimester, that there's such a risk of miscarriage, and that the psychological experience of having experience of holding a life in your body and not and being so responsible for, I suppose, it's survival, but also not really knowing, I mean, we can do things to kind of be as bit, as healthy as possible, but often it's just out of our hands, and it's so scary to just be so powerless and to hold that threshold of life and death in our minds kind of for 3 whole months. And this is
Completely.
that just like on steroids. Like, that is just that
Literally.
exact experience of like my body is holding this baby and keeping her alive, and it feels like I'm on a precipice, and I don't know if it's actually going to be okay. And not knowing if it's going to be okay, I mean, for that long, every day holding that, I mean, whew.
Wow, Carl, you know how validating it is to hear that from another person because I feel like so few people really understand that that's exactly what it feels like. It's every single day trying to trust your body and then also not trying to turn on yourself because so much of it was me trying to not tell myself. There were nights where I'd literally cry with my husband going like, oh my gosh, I'm failing our baby. My body is failing our baby. And he'd be like, no. You're like, we need to get that. Stop thinking that. Like, you're not doing that, but that's what happens. That's what happens when you're holding that constantly all day, every day. And the thing is also my doctor, like, okay, he was a great surgeon and stuff like that, but he was very unemotional. It was a very difficult thing to deal with because he was too direct with me. It didn't work for me. And I know he deals with a lot of high-risk pregnancies and stuff like that. I'm not going to not grant him the grace for that, but I just feel like there were so many things that he did not need to say to me that increased my anxiety. And one of those things was just like, if your diabetes on top of all of this goes out of control, this is what's going to happen to your baby, right? So like, even when it came to food, like having this con like this relationship with food, and I run a food page. I love food. Like I my like you know, all on top of all of that, like cooking, every single thing I put in my mouth was so much stress because I'm like, will this spike my sugar? Won't this spike my glucose? Is my baby gonna be okay? Is her heartbeat okay? Like constantly, Carly. So it's really real. That feeling that's
So
so
that's like
amplified,
really.
literally. And you know, that feeling, like you said, that's so amplified in those first 3 months, and you think you get to that 12-week mark, and like you do get a good high five to like thumbs up to go, and you're like, okay, I can stress a little less now. I had what was at 8 weeks of trying of basically a little bit of breathing, and then it was amplified to the nine to the ninth degree, and then segueing, I guess. I'm talking a lot into the NICU experience that we were saying was again anxiety on 9 and 10 all the time, stressing over her coming home.
Oh.
And yeah, I think going back in time, the woman that I was during my pregnancy, she was very, very scared all the time. I think she was valid for her to feel that way. But I wish I could just go back and be like, all of the hurdles you're facing, like, it will be okay. And you don't deserve this, but it will be okay, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and first of all, please do not worry about talking a lot. I've asked you to talk. So talk as much as you can. Yeah, but I think what I'm hearing you say is that you maybe needed a voice of compassion and a voice of almost like a parental holding space, because isn't it? I'm thinking globally here, and I'm just sort of zooming out and thinking about what you're saying about the motherhood experience and how close we are, how close it is, how easy it is to fall into the self-blame and the I need to get this right. This is a test. It's a test of my character. It's a test of my bodily function. But it's more than that, because I would love to hear you speak to this, but it's like being a woman and bringing a child into the world. It's almost like a moral duty, and we've got this like hangover from, I think, the past, where it's not just a simple, we can't, it's not like a physiological thing, like, can I run a marathon? It's like, if you can't, you are not good. You have failed morally almost. And I think to be caught in that and to not have the voice of someone saying, how are you though? Like, what do you need? Like, you don't deserve this. This is horrible for you. You deserve to find peace and surrendering and calm in this. And I wish I could offer you that, right? Like, because you were just like, I don't know, like an innocent actually being pulled into this experience. And then you felt very little innocence. You felt actually the burden of sort of almost being a perpetrator to your baby, which is such a wild
Yeah, wild, wild, wild feeling, wild
Yeah,
thought.
tell me about that.
I will say that, like I said, I was very grateful to have support, you know, and people, my close circle, my mom, my friends, my very close friends, my partner, the people around me, like my parents and stuff, like people really held me through every step of it to the best of their ability to just go like, we know, like validating, right? But nobody will ever be able to understand what it felt like. Do you know what I'm saying? Like nobody else walked it every single day. So in spite of all of the support that you feel sometimes, there's still an emotional layer that nobody can soothe for you, you know? And like that experience, that moral, that feeling of moral, like moral failure, oof, that like you've put it so perfectly. It's like a cloud that is over your head the entire time, especially when you're carrying a high-risk pregnancy. And the thing is, you can tell yourself, I mean, even people around me said, Miri, you know, we'll cross bridges when we get there. It's okay. It's not going to be on you. But it doesn't matter how much some people say that because you're carrying this life. You know, you're sitting there going, I'm going to fail. I don't want 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 to fail. And like that feeling is so. Coming back to what you were saying, that feeling is so overwhelming, and it's such a conditioned experience to feel that way because it really isn't a moral failing at all. It's like it has nothing to do with that at all. For any woman has to have gone through that. It's not real, but somewhere in your body, you feel that now that I have this, now that I'm carrying this child and this tiny human that's growing in me, if I don't reach the finish line, I have let down everyone. Why do we carry that? Why do we carry that? And I don't think I've ever said that out loud until this moment, but that's what it felt like, right? Like I carried that for the love. For the whole pregnancy, like that's what I carried. And then nobody asked me to carry that, right? But societally, that's on you somehow.
How
I
is that
don't.
on? I mean, a part of me thinks maybe it's like an evolutionary thing, like maybe it's just as an on like a purely organ
Maybe.
level, like as like we have this like duty to continue the species, and the duty is in our bodies, and our bodies are the site of that responsibility, and like, and so it's almost like on a species survival level, which maybe is such an archaic part of our brain chemistry that we don't even understand it. Like it's not, because it's not logical, right? Like, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, I think there's that. I think there's a lot about, I mean, I think we don't have to go too far back in history where actually that was just the role of women. The role of women was to provide a child for a man to continue his line, and that was her duty. I mean, within our lifetime, we've seen royal families speak about that. You know, that like that all that
The
woman is
air.
the heir, exactly. So I don't think it's just we don't just make it up. I mean, it's
No.
definitely, that's the thing. But isn't that interesting how, again, even in our experience of it, it feels like a psychosis. It feels like, where did I get this idea from? This must be on me that I conjured this idea up. And it's really not on us. It's not an individual
No.
sort of, I don't know, imagination. It's a collective, it's a collective consciousness, right? It's something that we all hold in our bodies and are imprisoned by, I think.
Totally. You know, it's funny you say that because I often said during my pregnancy that that was the most mammalian I ever felt. Like that was something I said all the time. I was like, I'm an animal. This is the most animalistic experience I've ever had. I was like literally thinking of like how a cow like has a calf. And like I literally thought that from the moment that I felt pregnant, I was just like, this is my proof. Like we are animals, you know? So it's interesting that you said that. Like, it was funny. Like my husband and I would laugh about it all the time. And like, even like, you know, when you feel your milk coming in or like things like that, I was just like, whoa, like I really am an animal. I'd say that a lot. So 100% that. And I also think that you don't, like as a person, you can do as much unpacking and undoing work about like these societal influences that you experience as a person and as a woman. And you don't know how it's going to come confront you at another time. And that's a really big part of it, I think, when with what you're saying, like that it's so deeply indoctrinated in us to think and know that like when we become a mother, this is what it means. And like when you have a baby and this is what you're carrying and the weight of that, that you don't even realize that you're still carrying these some conditioned thoughts or whatever, and it shows up like that. So I completely agree with you thinking about it a little bit deeper. It's real, it's just so real.
So real. Have you read the book Matrescence by Lucy Jones?
No, I haven't.
I highly recommend it. I'm gonna just read a quote from her, which has kind of been like my, I don't know, the my it's been so fascinating to me to think of it, but it's this idea of like how motherhood creates a kind of, or I suppose unearths a political experience in us that we didn't anticipate. I'm gonna read what she says. She says, I thought early motherhood would be gentle, beatific, pacific, tranquil, bathed in a soft light. But actually, it was hardcore, edgy, gnarly. It wasn't pale pink. It was brown of shit and red of blood. And it was the most political experience of my life, rife with conflict, domination, drama, struggle, and power. Ooh, it gives me
Wow,
goosey thinking
what
of.
an incredible quote.
Yeah. So I think that's for me just. I mean, it sort of speaks to the mammalian thing as well, right? That there's this bodily experience that you kind of are forced to be in. But then, the other thought that I had recently was the idea of, like, as a white woman, that I don't think I had had a visceral experience of oppression until I became a mother.
I've
Because
actually thought about that a lot.
It was in my body, this feeling of, and when I use that word, enslaved or not imprisoned, I think
Yes,
that
yes.
the slavery of motherhood for me was so visceral. This idea of this thing being in your body and then your body being responsible for keeping it alive and nurturing it. And that then becomes your life, your role, and you lose freedom and you. There's so much that goes with it, and you are all of these things that we're talking about, this sort of this burden of care, this burden of responsibility, which of course isn't only a burden. You love your child,
Course.
want to, and care so deeply about it. I mean, but it's yeah, there's this aspect of it which is like you
Because
feel
you self-abandon.
yeah. Well, you aren't
You aren't
you aren't
you anymore.
free. You aren't free.
No. And yeah, I think I've thought a lot about what you've just said about white women and the political aspect of it and the What is the word? What is the word that you used?
I said that it was the first time I'd had a visceral
Yes.
experience of.
Visceral experience,
I
oppression,
don't think
right?
I've ever felt oppression before.
And I think that when I became a mother and I was like reading a lot of content online, or even when I was pregnant because I was on bed rest for as long as I was like constantly reading, and I just saw there was like a lot of content that white women make in this in the sphere, like compared with women of color. There's fewer women of color who make content about this, right? About the hardships of motherhood and the difficulties that people experience and holding the space. And there's more white women that create content about that. And I feel like it's because as white women, it's the first visceral feeling of oppression that you feel. So I
Also, the
thought
shock
about it a
to
lot.
the system.
It's such
Yeah,
a shock to the system
the shock to the system.
and as a woman of color, like that's not a thing for me. Like in the sense of, I know, I've seen it like beyond my gender and beyond like in just the different spheres, right? And it's something that is that I see people face constantly in microwaves, right? So, but it was still a visceral experience, even though, right? So I wouldn't say that it like that in a minimizing way at all, like that there's something that's bigger than that, because I still felt that. I still felt this level of like, whoa, I've never felt like I don't belong to myself anymore, and that feeling that with the quote that you read, that feeling of rising inside of yourself, because there's just so much. It's not flowery. The experience is not flowering. I don't know a single woman who has felt that way. Like, why do we have those quotes that are just all about the tranquility of motherhood? Like, who wrote that? First of all, right? Like, what were you going through? Were you,
The cultural gaslighters, that's
what are
who.
you doing? Like, who wrote that? What happened? Like, do you have an
Yeah.
internalized misogyny that's like written like deeply inside of yourself or something? And like, that's not to say that those experiences do not exist. It's more the fact that like when I think about postpartums, like fresh postpartum, I had so much postpartum rage. It's unreal. And like even that is not written about enough, I think. People talk about postpartum depression and anxiety and like the what you're going to experience and the downing, the downs that you're going to feel. But I was so rageful. Like, I was so rageful. I was so full, like full of anger and frustration. And like, it was like at people for like, how can you not think about this element of this? And like, just anger at the world. I felt such deep injustice in the NICU again. Let me speak about that, sure, like just a little bit about it, like as a segue. But basically, I knew she was going to be there in the NICU because I had a risk of preterm labor, but I didn't know what it was going to be like. I didn't know how long it was going to be. When I tell you that the nurses and the doctors were trash, they were, it was the worst experience I've ever experienced of medical system of my life. And I was in a very good private hospital, so I can't imagine what it could be like in another space, right? And my father is a doctor, so I'm going to say that. So I have not ever experienced a level. That was a big awakening to me. I'm going to acknowledge that from like a place of privilege. Like, I just remember thinking so deeply during that period, like, oh, this is the medical fail, the failure of the medical system that women talk about. Like, oh, women experience this every single day, going to the hospital, not even pregnant. Oh, women experience, like, that was a big awakening for me. I will say that, of understanding. That's why I'm saying, like, I think it still was a visceral, like, awakening of oppression, even if it wasn't the only one I've experienced. I feel like it was the loudest because it was me, right? Personally. And seeing my child go through this and being in such a vulnerable state and having to trust people so deeply to take care of her and make the right choices. And what the hell do I know as a new mother, right? I am respond like literally putting all my weight on these people to make the right decision. And then to find out that actually my doctor is doing the wrong thing here. He's keeping her for too long. There's nothing wrong with her. She doesn't actually need to be here for that long. I forced her discharge. I don't know how much longer she would have been there. I don't know how much more money they would have taken from me. Like, it was such a political decision. It was such a moment of real oppression, right? To feel that in a private hospital and feel so powerless, even on top of the fact that like I posted about with breastfeeding, right? I wasn't allowed to latch for 3 weeks. 3 weeks, Carly. They did not let me latch for 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
I was like every
Was
day
it a
asking.
baby-friendly hospital?
I don't know. Like, I don't think so. I don't
No, they
think so.
don't
It
do
doesn't
kangaroo.
sound like it. Sorry?
They didn't do kangaroo care.
We did. We do do care.
Oh.
We did do that. But it wasn't even something that was like every day a conversation, right? It was something I had to constantly ask for. It was something I had to keep advocating for myself about. When how can I advocate for anything when you come out of that state? I have like an open C-section wound. I'm sitting in a NICU every single day, like days after giving birth, right? Not being able to rest. And then I need to ask you to, will I be doing kangaroo care today? Why do I have to advocate for that, right? And then speaking to friends, I will say, do you know Kelly Van Rooyen, who runs the Conscious Parenting Coach? She's changed her handle now, I think, but she used to be.
She emigrated, yes.
No, she's still here. She's in Mpumalanga, I think. She's a good friend of mine. And I spoke to her a lot about this time, like trying to, and she was like telling me, if you can try and get a lactation specialist to show up for you in the hospital. And like, it was really wonderful advice. She really held the space for me, but I didn't have the capacity, right, to even think about doing that. I was like spinning all the time. My hormones were like on one. I can't even tell you. So I was there asking my doctor every day, when will I be able to latch? When will I be able to latch? And he would be like, no, she's not sucking strongly enough yet. I don't think, but wouldn't that have helped? Anyway, whatever. It was just a really, it was shocking. It was shocking. And yeah, like coming out of the point of me saying that, right? And it was so traumatic. I think the last day, the day before I forced her discharge, my husband and I forced her discharge, I had the biggest mental breakdown of my life. Like, I remember my mother telling me, because I was like screaming at the doctor on the phone, and I was literally like, I don't understand why she's in here. Like, you're not giving me a good enough reason. She's gaining weight. She's drinking her bottles. I need to, you, she's reached the end point where babies are literally like, you give them 48 hours of testing that she's fine. Like, why do you want to keep her in for further? I don't understand. It's been more than that now. Tell me why. And this doctor just couldn't really give me a reason. The reasons were things like, she's not drinking the amount I would like her to drink. But she's gaining weight. And if she's progressing, why? She's on all bottles. She's not on a nasogastric tube anymore. Why? Why are we doing this? So it was a lot of that fighting. I had so much fight in that early period of motherhood. In the first 5 weeks of becoming a mother, it was all fight, and I was rageful, and I was angry at my husband, and I was angry at everyone around me, you know. It is not a flowery experience. And for women who go through this NICU experience so early in, I know that there are a lot of women who are very supported in the NICU. That was not my experience. But women who go through similar experiences as mine, like, I don't know how you even process that rage afterwards. I still feel like I'm still working on it, you know? So that's what I feel. I agree with you in the sense of it's, I have never felt that imprisoned than during that experience, and how much it has lived in me, you know.
But that's, I mean, what you're saying, it's like such an abuse of power, right? Like that kind
Really,
of power over
completely.
and the power that they hold, which is really to, because we are so vulnerable, because babies are so vulnerable, because your baby was so vulnerable in particular, that they have
Yeah.
even more power and that they would take that vulnerable time and actually use it to have power over you. I mean, it's just so sick.
Yeah.
So unsupportive, and I can imagine how angry you felt. And I think, honestly, I think anger is the correct emotion to feel. I mean, it's righteous anger. Like that is what you should be feeling in that situation. And also the sort of, talking about like the bodily autonomy piece, like to feel like you as the mother, which you've now spent however long, eight and a bit months, like being responsible, being the body that keeps this baby alive. And then the baby gets taken from you and gets taken to a hospital where you aren't allowed to be with the baby. You aren't allowed to offer the baby what you as the mother know is what you need to offer the baby, that you get cut off from everything that we talked about, the sort of growing responsibility in you and the onus on you to do this thing, and then you get sort of severed, that you can't actually use your body in the way you want to use your body and know you need to use your body to care for your baby. I mean, that is just so
No, it was
devastating.
terrific. It was
Devastating.
terrific. And when I did eventually get to latch, I just remember like craving that, those, because that was also the only time I got to be alone with her in a room, not surrounded by other parents and other babies and nurses. It was like the only time I got, and I realized it was 3 weeks until I got to be alone with my baby. Like, in alone with her, completely alone, nobody else. It still makes me so emotional to think about it, because it's shocking when you think that that's not what you're supposed to experience at all.
No, it's a huge loss. You lost
And, you
power.
know, 3 weeks, you know, of not being able to hold her whenever I wanted, to pick her up without asking for permission, to just, it's just crazy the things that parents go through in that unit, to be honest with you. And you surrender because you have to go, we just want this baby to get to a to term, or when they're safe enough to be released, and then we can start our lives. But life started already. Life has started already. And you just have to move, and you don't know. And it's horrible for the dads too. You know what I mean? Like, my husband was there experiencing the same things as me, and hoping for his moment of connection with our baby, and like feeding her even with a tube. I have photos of us, and it's just like we'd come home depressed every night. Every night we'd get back in the car at 10 o'clock when the unit was closing, and drive home in silence. And then he'd get some rest, and I would be waking up in the night and pumping and crying. Do you know what I mean? It was just crazy, like that time of our lives. And nothing prepares you for that loss, right? No, nothing prepares you for that loss, and nothing prepares you for the emotions that come up as a result of feeling discriminated against, right? In that moment, or silenced. Because that's such a deep feeling of silence that women in that situation feel. It's such a deep feeling of silence because your voice really doesn't matter. You have to trust what's happening around you. And they'll sit and talk to you about, like, it's just also like we could talk about this forever, really. Like, people are so desensitized in that, those environments, they actually don't even realize what people are going through, you know. I haven't even gotten to the point yet of like writing a letter to that doctor or to the hospital, but it's there, the draft's there. I feel like I just have so much to say and I don't want it to feel incomplete, but it's very real. Motherhood is very raw. It brings out, but also starting it like this on such a traumatic note, like it's a big shift and it's messy, you know?
Oh, I just feel for you. I mean, I could just only imagine. I've got a few clients who've had NICU experiences, and unfortunately, it's always traumatic. I mean, it is just so traumatic, and it sets it up, you know, it's the start of it. And that breastfeeding piece is such a fundamental piece because, you know, full-term baby lands on your chest, baby is immediately in contact with you, immediately latches after birth, all of that, you can still have breastfeeding struggles. It's very common, very, very common.
Yes, very common.
But to have that NICU experience where there is so much that gets in the way, that interferes, that prevents that natural, quote unquote, natural. I mean, I hate that word when it comes to childbirth, everything after, because it's so, it feels like, again, such an imprisoned, oppressive word, actually. But really, you got fucked with, basically. Your everything that felt natural to you got fucked with. And then when you when whether you're, you know, a mom who has experienced that or not, when you have those breastfeeding struggles again, it's those same narratives. Body is failing me. This is my one job. Moral failing. I mean, there's no breastfeeding mother who doesn't feel like it's a moral failing if she struggles to breastfeed.
And
It's just
it's wild. It's so wild. I feel like I, when I finally got, even with the pumping, to be honest with you, but like when I finally got to latch, and like it, at first it was all right, but then I feel like it, we needed a lot more work because my supply was impacted, like so much was impacted, right? And I felt like I was constantly playing catch up. Like that's what I would do with my body. Like, we just need to work harder. We need to work harder, Miri. Like, stop it now. Like, you need to get your mind right. And then you'd always get like, you know, people tell you, oh, don't get emotional because it's going to impact your supply. Like, I don't know if you've heard that, but so many people say that. Like, nurses said that to me while I was pumping in the NICU. Do you know what I mean? No. You can't get upset and emotional because you're going to lose all your milk. And like, you're already in a situation where you're like, I'm trying to make the amount for my baby to drink in a bottle here anyway, even though that's not what I really want, but whatever. And you, that moral failing, that sense of feeling like you don't know why you're fa why it's failing. You want to push yourself harder. You need to do more work. I need to sleep less. I need to, oh, I need to get the jungle juice, like whatever it was, you know, that gets you in the state of panic to make sure that you're providing. And then especially when it's a big struggle, like where I think it's a struggle for, like you've said, for most women who have been on that journey. It's not easy for everyone, for most women. But then when you're in a position where you feel like you're needing to play catch up, it's just panic stricken and anxiety inducing. And the day that I decided, like, and a very good close friend of mine actually struggled a lot with breastfeeding, and she was very supportive of, Miri, it's okay if you need to bottle feed. Like, you need to get to the place. Like, this is how it worked for me. Like, this is, I felt, this is how I felt the moment I decided that I needed to do this, and it wouldn't be me screaming at myself every single day. And I was very grateful for her sharing that with me because it really helped me get to that point. It was sooner than I really, really had hoped that I could have breastfed longer than I did, but I had to be honest with myself. Like, it was not serving my baby, and it was not serving me anymore. So I had to be honest and go, like, what is actually going to make me happy, make us happy? And she's going to be fine. Like, there's tons of bottle-fed babies, formula-fed babies in the world, and they're okay. And my baby is completely okay. I have the evidence of it. She's fine, you know?
Course.
And, you know, my mom even at one point said to me, you know, Miri, you've had a different story. It's okay for you to stop now. You know, it's all right that Amelia is formula fed. Let's just go with that, you know. And it was hard, but you come to that conclusion that, like, the things that you're telling yourself is, like, just not true. You don't have to do that to yourself anymore.
So could you feel yourself sort of unshackling from that
Yes.
narrative? Like you were like,
Yes. The moment I gave in to the formula and said, my trusted that that she was going to be okay. And the thing is, like, she had remnants of reflux in the NICU already. She was, like, struggling with that, and nobody was listening to me about that either. Just let me just say that. That was another whole level. I was like, I know my baby's screaming for a reason. She's upset. She's lacking contact, and this seems like there's reflux going on here. But nobody wanted to listen to me anyway. So either way, it needed to be dealt with. Like, the fact that she, like, it needed to be dealt with. We needed to change it up anyway, you know. I needed to make sure I could do something to settle her and make her feel better, you know. So, yeah, the moment I made those, like, came to a place of calm and acceptance and not self-loathing, right, is when I could feel myself unshackling from the pressure, you know, of trying to be perfect and show up in this way that people, the society makes you feel about breastfeeding, you know, and
Totally.
about that part of motherhood. Just a very rude awakening.
Oh, no,
Yeah.
what you're saying is so apt. You know, and I think for me, knowing you a little bit, like you are a powerful person. You know, you've got a powerful mind, and we spoke at the beginning about how you know yourself, and you are not someone who doesn't have a voice, actually. You have worked very, I mean, even the name of your Instagram, Breaking Brown Silence, I mean, it's all about having a voice. And you have a very powerful voice. And I just think, I mean, my heart is going out to all of the mothers who are not like you, actually, who don't even know how to speak
Yeah. And if it
from
was
that.
hard for me, who's
It's
somebody
hard
who's
for
like
you.
that, I thought about that all the time. Like, if it's hard for me, if I'm sitting here silenced, and if me, the kind of person that I am, I'm sitting here unable to voice how I'm feeling and angry and emotional and trying to find an outlet and advocate for myself. Somebody who's not even remotely like this, how much harder is it? I thought about that all the time.
Yeah.
I thought about it all the time.
So if you could speak for everyone and speak to the system, what would you change? Like if like may like wave a
So
magic
many
wand, you're the
things.
ruler of the world, you would just change things from start to finish. What are some of the things you've thought about over this time that you wish everybody would do differently, think differently about it, or just like the system would have a different way of operating around this whole thing?
I think in, like, the NICU, or just in general.
In general, like what do we yeah, make the world better for us. What
There's
is
so many. Oh, there's so much, Carly. There's so
Can
much. There's so
you
much.
write a book?
I feel like we should write a book, man. Like, there's so much to say. But I think that there's so much mental health support that needs to be put in place for pregnant women and, yeah, like, fresh mothers, mothers in general. I think that specialization in that space, and then the putting them in those environments, hospital environments, doctors need to start sitting with maternal and postpartum psychologists and, like, having them on call for their patients who are going through high risk pregnancies. There needs to be funding for it. Like, women shouldn't need to pay for this. It's the same thing I feel about periods, for example. Like, why on earth do we have to pay for pads and tampons, everything? Like, don't even get me started on that. So, you know what I mean? Like, there needs to be funding behind it, especially in a private hospital. You're paying so much money already, right? Offer me some support from the beginning. Help me. You're dealing with a woman that's going through IVF, for example. Like, I didn't go through an IVF journey, but women who are already going through that, as a doctor, offer the support already. Let her have a go. Don't make her go and seek out a psychologist for that. Offer it. Have somebody on call. Work with people closely. That's one of them, right? In terms of the NICU, in and of itself, there is so much that could change. And I can only speak from my experience. People need privacy. I've spoken to my dad about this so much. Like, people need privacy. You need to create spaces inside of the NICU for people to have alone time with their babies. You need to have comfortable chairs. Can I just say that there are women who have open wounds sitting there trying to sit with their baby for 12 to 18 hours a day with little breaks to feed themselves and pump? Please, man, make it comfortable, right? We should not be sitting on little office chairs and things like that. That's insane to me, right? It is so abusive. The fact that people that work in those environments, they need to be trained on like bedside manner, emotional regulation, just kindness. Like, it's the things that I've went through on the micro level with nurses, like, it still enrages me when I think about it. Things I had to go take to a head nurse. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why did I have to get put in that position as a new mother, right? I'm so vulnerable already. And like, for women who can't even get to the point of speaking to the head nurse, like, that's, I can't even imagine how somebody felt when they didn't get to do that, like, for themselves, how much more that must have felt that they didn't have the power or the strength inside of themselves to get there, right? So much of that, so much support. Lactation specialists need to be easily accessible to women in hospitals. Maternity wards need to be, and I know it comes down to like also staffing and funding and all of those things, but there's just so much that can be that is left for us to do. Like, it's unreal the how much I would do if I could. Yeah, those are just some of my ideas.
I mean, I hear you, and I think that that's, like I suppose it speaks to like a greater issue around mental health services not being available, full stop, to vulnerable populations, to
No. And it's standard, you know.
that women who give birth are a vulnerable population. And I think that maybe is the sort of the headline here, which is that we actually treat mothers. Both, there's actually a brilliant quote in the Matrescence quote. Actually, I'm just going to pull it up because I just read it and I wasn't going to bring it up, but it's such a flipping good one. This idea that I was responsible for the literal survival of an actual person, the dissonance between what I felt in myself, that this was a big deal, and what I felt society and culture were telling me, that this was not valuable work, although you have to get it totally right, was bewildering. And I think that for me is the fuck up, is that we're told this is so important, this is so beautiful, this is actually how you are finally valuable as a woman, right? You're finally of value to society. So like, yay, well done, you did a good thing, you're doing the thing you're meant to be doing, and if you don't do it perfectly, you're failing, So we've got that message, but then at the same time we've got off you go. Go on, go do it on your own, go figure it out. There's no support. We don't actually focus on
You're the
you.
mother, you should know how to do this. That kind of thing.
We don't see you as vulnerable. We don't see you as someone who needs care. We don't see you as someone who is recovering or who's healing or who is in a very, very fragile state of development, just like a baby, right? Like mothers are very, very fragile. We are little embryos of cells on some level, and we are like, so permeable actually. Everything comes in so easily, and we need so much protection and so much care. And that is not how we see this time. We see it as a time of, well, really, of like off you go and you stay in your house by yourself with your baby and you figure it out, and no one really wants anything from you other than to hold the baby and be an institutionalist factor
And it's a
and
big joke that, like, oh, you're free. Like, don't worry. Like, oh, we don't worry. Have to worry about you now. You know, you've got this. Oh, just hand me the baby. And it's like, it's wild. It's wild.
yeah. Oh, so I literally could talk to you for hours. Maybe we need to do another one of these and we can.
A part two, maybe.
But it's been really awesome talking to you. Is there any last thoughts you want to say that you have on your mind that we didn't touch on? I'm not sure if we covered everything that you were hoping to cover, but I think
No,
we.
we spoke so much. I feel like this was such a cathartic experience for me as well. And like, thank you for this, Kali, for reaching out to me and having this wonderful conversation. I love having it. It's lit such like vibes in me. And I've needed it. I didn't know how much I needed it, but it's been wonderful to talk to you. And
I'm so happy to hear that. And for me,
just one of the things, sorry.
yeah,
One of
go
the
for it.
things that I wanted to say as just something closing is that I think that in spite of all of this, right, that we go through, I think that is why women and why mothers are so powerful, right? It's that we shouldn't have to go through resilience to feel that way, right? We should know inherently that we are this incredible, like growing life, fighting fires from the moment the moment we know this baby is inside of us, the moment everything, even if you've lost a baby during this process, like the fire that you have inside of yourself, like the strength of woman, like it's unreal. Like it doesn't make me, I have never felt more in awe of the mothers around me while I was pregnant and while I became a mother. Like knowing that there were so many women around me that had gone through so much, even if it wasn't like on a scale of trauma or whatever, you know what I mean? But just the fact that you went through that, like it I was like, you guys are so incredible. Do you know what I mean? That's how I felt all the time. I looked at everyone with different eyes. And I feel like if we could embody that energy inside of ourselves, like from before we know we want to become mothers, you know, if we could find a way to like get in touch with that part of ourselves, I think it would just be an untouchable experience. Like nothing would be able to touch us. And just that sense of self that is so sure and so confident and believing in ourselves and understanding how much inherent strength you have that is unbelievable. I think I wish that we could like find a way to carry more of that inside of ourselves as a sense of surety, right? So that's what I feel like I want people to like try and take away from themselves for themselves from this as well, is just that yes, we go through all of these intense hardships, but like wow, we are so much bigger than that, you know? We are so
Yeah,
much bigger than that.
absolutely. I mean, it's a baptism by fire, but I think what you're
Yes, that.
trying to say is actually we have the potential to connect with that part of us. And know it and nurture it and nurture it collectively, you know.
And we need more support. We need all of those things. We need it. But like the fact that we do that and withstand it and stand up every day and go to work and show up for our families and show up for all of the elements of our lives that we need to, like, that speaks volumes about the kinds of humans mothers are, right?
Exactly. Women and mothers. I agree with you. I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, I do think there's some obvious thoughts about that in terms of how feminism has failed us and how there was a move to discredit motherhood in the feminist movement, you know, that there was a we've turned away from motherhood as a place, as a site of power. And actually, maybe what's happening is we're returning to that. We're returning to it as a site of our power, where we don't have to abandon our place in the home, so to speak, in order to feel our
Yes.
power in our culture. And I think that that's
Yeah.
a beautiful, maybe that's actually the message. And, you know, without going into any kind of like trad wife territory here, you know. But actually, it's about an internal power that we possess, and so that's beautiful. I love what you've said. Thank you for adding that. I'm glad you added that, so it didn't feel just like we were just talking about the devastation of it, because it's not. We rise like the phoenix from
No,
the
it can
ashes.
be both. That's always been a thing also, right?
Okay.
With Breaking Bra Silence, it's always been about the both and. It's everything. We are everything, right? And like it can be this intense experience, and it can also be this ability to accept that this is what we go through sometimes until the system is not broken, right? But in spite of, look at how fucking incredible we are. You know what I mean? So,
Absolutely. I
yeah.
love that. Yay. Yay, yes. Thank you. I'm so happy to have you on. You are such a brilliant mind, and I love hearing the way you think about all of this. So thank you so, so much. And I
No, I
will
appreciate it
probably
so
have
much.
you
Thank you for making the
back.
space. Yeah, I would love to actually. I feel like
Okay.
I could make the best series of this if these talks,
Yeah.
you know, it could
Yes.
be it, I love it so much. Thank you so much.
Awesome. And enjoy. Have a great day. And I enjoy the motherhood roller coaster.
And you.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to On the Couch with Carly. If something in this episode resonated with you or made you feel less alone, that means the world to me. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now in video format on YouTube. For exclusive content and resources, visit our website at onthecouchwithcarly.com. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please consider leaving a rating or review. It really does help others discover our safe space for authentic conversation. Until next time, please take good care of yourself. I can't wait to be back on the couch with you again.
Thank you.